I've been out there trying to find opportunities to make a positive impact on community. As Patrick has lost a family member, I've lost two close friends of mine. One was actually a working colleague. My concern was really, how can we support our community?
This is Bridging the Gap, a podcast series by the Ubele Initiative and Colourful Studios for the BAME Stream Project. Hi, I'm journalist Sinai Flary, and across this series, we'll be joined by the Ubele and BAME Stream team to explore the experiences of people impacted by the pandemic, as well as those providing services of support. Hi, guys.
Hi.
Hi there.
In 2020, the world changed for a generation. Coronavirus strain, COVID-19, became reality for every man, woman, and child. On the 23rd of March 2020, Prime Minister Boris Johnson told the country we must stay home and certain businesses were to close, starting a social curfew order unseen since the Second World War.
The NHS is in danger of being overwhelmed unless people heed government advice on social distancing.
But the stay home message was only the story for some. As we made sense of our new lives in lockdown, the country's essential workers never stayed home.
At the time, particularly during February and March and early April, every single day there was a new story.
Patrick Vernon, OBE, is a former Labour councillor for Hackney. He has been a social commentator and political activist in the voluntary and public sector for over 20 years.
Frontline staff, Black and Asian minority online staff working in the NHS or retail, transport, who were literally, sadly, dropping like flies without any necessary support from their employers, no proper PPE, and also it raised the biggest issues around that the pandemic kind of exposed the kind of inequalities in society big time. It magnified it in many ways.
And in August 2020, a shocking report by the Race Disparity Unit found that 34% of all critically ill COVID-19 patients were from a Black, Asian, minority ethnic background, despite us only making up 13% of the UK population, according to the 2011 census.
And as you know, that there's been a lot of death in the community, a lot of grief in the community, and a lot of bereavement, all happening in a very short space of time. And this has a massive impact in families and the wider community. And one of the key things that we got together, we realised that there wasn't a national offer around bereavement support for minority ethnic communities in Britain. I mean, I lost a family member to COVID, and so I know what it's like. And so that was reasons why that we all got together from our experiences of working around mental health for many, many decades. And we thought it was important that we created a new intervention on this issue.
I can give you a little bit of background about where we started from.
Dr. Yancy Rolston has a depth of experience and expertise in health equality development. She is a practitioner as well as an academic and a skilled mental health and well-being trainer and facilitator.
Apart from supporting Patrick and Helen to set it up, I've been out there trying to find opportunities to make a positive impact on community. As Patrick has lost a family member, I've lost two close friends of mine. One was actually a working colleague. But myself as a clinician, my concern was really, how can we support our community? And seeing that services aren't necessarily targeted to us, so we wanted to ensure that whatever bereavement service was on offer, it was culturally appropriate, because we know we all grieve and handle grief differently. It's the way we deal with funerals, the way we bury our loved ones. It's all different depending on your community and what background you're from.
According to studies from the Office of National Statistics, the mortality rate, that being the rate of deaths, finds COVID-19 affecting men more than women and the elderly more than younger people.
Lots of families were trying to grieve and they weren't allowed to grieve. As you know, with the lockdown, there were restrictions on how people could say goodbye. If someone died and they were in hospital, people generally speaking weren't allowed to go into hospital to say goodbye to their loved ones. And then again, there were the burial restrictions because of the COVID guidelines, etc., which limited the number of people, how people could attend burials.
But not all areas have been affected equally.
So it's not just a London thing. You know, it's had a big impact in all the major cities and the conurbation areas. Even the place where I grew up in the Midlands, places in Wolverhampton, Birmingham, after London, there's been a massive disproportionate impact of COVID. And we recognise that as a network, as a partnership, that all communities were affected. I mean, in the early days of the pandemic, a lot of Filipino nurses were disproportionately affected. And some of them, because of their immigration status, they didn't really want to say too much. But now they're actually articulating their voices quite clearly.
It really has impacted on our community. Around this time last year, there was one week when three black young men had approached me, just expressing the depression. And they actually used the word suicidal thoughts. And it threw me, because it was the first time in such a short space of time people were expressing those feelings. And I reached out to a colleague and I said, what can we do beyond the therapy and the counseling? What can we do? In our community, as Black people, we are disproportionately impacting in any event, especially in terms of in mental health. The services do not cater for us. The services are not culturally competent. Some of the therapists there, some of them are quite honest and say they don't know, they don't understand. So from the mental health perspective, COVID has brought it to light. It's been there all the time. But in terms of the deaths, yes, people of all nationalities are dying, but it's the access to the culturally competent services is where we are struggling.
Our children have lost their parents, aunts, uncles, grandparents. And, you know, there's been a whole debate in the media, as you know, about the impact of the pandemic on mental health and young people, which is obviously a big issue. That is something that we're actually looking at also in BAMEstream, and maybe Jens could touch on that as well.
We've started working on developing a toolkit. And the toolkit will be a resource that will help, say, teachers and mentors and youth workers on how to support young people to get them out of the trauma they're experiencing so that they can thrive. Oh, that there's this particular cohort of young people, from 15 probably to 18, who will be struggling because of the school and the exams. And they're just at that age where they really understand what it means to have lost a parent. They understand the depth of it, you know, the impact of it financially and on their well-being. So we're trying to figure out ways in which we can capture their stories and their experiences, because there's some discussions around that say in a few years' time, those will be the needs, you know, those who will be not in employment or training. So we're working with them, that cohort of young people, to develop some sort of tool that youth workers can use. But additional to that, we're getting young people to produce podcasts and TikTok reels and all of these things to share their stories through their lens. And they will be doing it peer-to-peer support, supporting each other, but then those of the elders who engage with them, but you know, we'll be there to hold them a little bit, point them in the right direction, but to use the information that come out to influence the organizations like Patrick talked about, the CCGs and the commissioning bodies, to say, you know, the young people, these are some of the needs they have. Come on, put your money where your mouth is.
So there's a whole range of us have come together.
We actually went to the root of it. So we did a mapping exercise in early days to find out what were some of the challenges that individuals are experiencing, organizations that work with our community were experiencing, and organizations that don't work with us, who should be and ought to be working with us, and some of the blocks and gaps were. And reports have come out, it's been published, and we've been going through some of the recommendations to figure out how can we support the needs of the community, because not everyone wants pay, not everyone actually acknowledges that they're struggling. They've decided we would be doing bits and pieces to support the community as they need it. So for example, the communities where the rituals around grief and loss and bereavement haven't been happening, we're plugging that gap and we're jointing some of that doing the memorial. Then there's the bereavement support service that's been offered by one of that. They are on 3 support sessions for free for individuals who are struggling with grief, loss, and bereavement. Hi, Bafo.
Hello.
How are you today?
I'm very well, thank you. Glad to be here.
Bafour Ababio is a psychoanalytic intercultural psychotherapist and also the clinical lead at Nafsia Intercultural Therapy Center. What does your role as clinical lead involve?
It's about providing clinical leadership, ensuring that therapists and counselors are adequately supported to deliver good therapy to clients.
Alongside his clinical role, Bafour developed a career in managing mental health services, integrating a community-based response to support the recovery from a broad range of mental health problems.
He also involved making sure that therapists and counselors have regular clinical supervision, of course, providing intercultural therapy to marginalized communities. Into that, therapists are professionally developing through educational and professional development activities. It's accredited by UKCP, and we ensure that we are adhering to the ethical framework.
Why did NAFSIA get involved with the BAME Stream initiative during the pandemic? Why was it important to you?
Well, the pandemic with issues around and disproportionality and stating impact in Black African Asian community. We've all heard, witnessed discrimination and lack of access. And these were the very issues which initiated the inception of NAFSIA in the 1980s. So when BAME Stream made up practitioners, therapists, policy specialists, activists all together to focus on the devastating impact of the pandemic in our communities, NAFSIA, with its history, practice, and issues of social justice and anti-racist practice and culturally competent therapy, invited naturally to be a part of the thinking space where ideas were being formulated with regards to tackling the area of bereavement within our community.
Yeah. And can you tell us what sort of services are available to those?
Where is the anger? Where is this? What's that? But anger in some communities is, and it's not allowed into the process immediately because sometimes, and I'm not generalizing, but sometimes that there is a presence of the deceased, the anger might incur their displeasure because in some communities, the link between the temporal world and the spiritual world are really quite real. And that has got to be taken into consideration. Rituals around also reference this interconnectivity between the worlds of the living and the dead has got to carry out certain duties by performing certain sort of responsibility. And when these rituals are not carried out, it heightens anxiety, guilt, as I said earlier on, and loss of meaning. And a lot of that has been thwarted, understandably so, by the lockdown and the social distancing. So these experiences are keenly felt, cases where rituals are meaningful. And rituals in some communities are meaningful when carried out in one's country of origin, you see. So if somebody loses a loved one in England, the rituals would have to be carried out in that country, that person's country of origin, to have its proper meaning. And a lot of that hasn't happened. So there's a lot of people sitting there with all these feelings around guilt, anxiety, responsibility, not being properly discharged. So there's a need for clinicians, therapists to have an understanding of how various communities might express their grief and mourning in different ways so that people are not pathologized by people who might not have an understanding. And occupying a position of curiosity, I'm not saying that all therapists ought to be 100% culturally competent, but therapists ought to be humble and curious.
You know, I didn't actually really think about that, you know, as an additional side of the suffering. You know, I understand the loss and the bereavement, but I do understand when it comes to people's cultures, there's a way to send people off or, you know, say goodbye. And the idea of not being able to do that is like an added pressure, added dynamic that myself and maybe lots of others didn't think about.
NAFSIA offers a kind of therapy which is termed intercultural therapy. It's a culturally competent therapy service This means that therapists and counselors are self-aware and possess empathic knowledge and understanding of other cultures, being able to think about identity formation through a racial lens. Therapists at NAFSIAD would have an awareness of dominant British cultural values and ensuring that those values are not imposed on our clients. We're commissioned to provide 12-session therapy to people who live in Enfield, Camden, Islington and Haringey. We also have interventions for women who've experienced domestic violence abuse. We offer group work and professionals in England and Scotland. The focus of the work has been on developing a good service delivery to African, Asian, Caribbean communities. The counseling and therapy team comprise many cultural groups. Many of our therapists have lived experiences of the issues being addressed with clients, that is, of being refugees themselves, or being political prisoners, of having experienced loss, bereavement. So the clinical team, is imbued with a social and political consciousness, and therefore we are attuned to those realities in the lives of the clients we see. One other thing about NAFSIAD is we don't offer counseling and therapy through interpreters. We strive to provide therapy in the mother tongues. Mm. So there are about 20 languages on offer at NAFSIAD. May I name some of them?
Of course, go ahead.
So we have Amharic, Arabic, Bengali, and of course the language that we're using, English. We have Ga, Spanish, Sileti, Tigre, Tigrinya, Turkish, Hui, Urdu, French, Farsi, German, Krobo, Russian, Kurmanchi, Somali, etc.
There are people who understand your language and your culture. That is so important.
Yes. People who came to NAFSIAD would comment how very understood they felt. Language, as you know, also carries culture. And when a therapist is able to be landed quite suddenly, and for a service which was being delivered exclusively in person, we had to think really quickly how to transition the service to an online offer, bearing in mind as well that not everyone or the clients in the communities that we serve would have the technical tools to be able to engage remotely. Secondly, not all of them might have the privacy to be able to have a space to feel safe enough to talk about very difficult issues, which is why some people leave home to go to the therapy's practice. So we had to take all those things into consideration, managing risks, safeguarding, ensuring that we could reach as many people as we possibly could at that time, which we were able to do. It might mean checking with people, how safe they were during a contact. Is anybody in the room with them? Mm. If so, is there something else they can do? Some people might opt to go to the park and then use a telephone. And so clients who have come with increasing levels of anxiety about death, about contamination, fear of losing their loved ones, losing contact with the community, being worried about the children, about the future, isolation, growing feelings of helplessness, frustration, worries about their health, not having enough access to the health service. And NAFSIAD also helps people deal with practical issues. So they still have issues with asylum, refugee cases, mm-hmm. immigration cases. Mm-hmm. I think the feedback has been one which people felt held and contained. And clients sometimes would wonder, given that we're all in this pandemic, really grateful that you're experiencing the same thing, but you're still being able to offer support and care and attention and being able to contain me. But we're sitting at the moment not knowing what's coming up next, because people have been somehow cooped up, been in their homes, and now the lockdown is being relaxed. How do people venture out? That's another stage where people are feeling quite anxious. So the outside world has become, over the year, quite alien. And stepping out now is going to be another challenge to help clients navigate. Call it therapeutic support. Okay. So it is three sessions. Mm-hmm. So people have an experience of being supported. People have an experience of being heard, being understood, having the Black empathic experience at NAFSIAT. And often there is signposting. People would say, oh, this is good. I'd like it to continue. I would say that purpose of probing the assumed position of the universality of Western psychotherapy and to include non-Western concepts of how to help people in psychotherapy and counseling. So notions about what constitutes the family, what constitutes the self, the connection between the spiritual world and the temporal world. All of that is taken into consideration, the whole being of the person. So the external realities are very much taken into consideration, and that focus is not on the individual inner experience. It's part of it. But the cultural, social, political context of being Black or being Asian, what does it mean to want to experience therapy coming from that particular place? Are you able to have those conversations? So intercultural therapies is also about being able to grasp the nettle or being able to have difficult conversations.
They are offering 3 support sessions for free for individuals who are struggling with grief, loss, and bereavement. Go on the website, mainstream.org. There's a bereavement section. You just go there, you fill the form out, self-referral, and it takes you through to the organization NAFSIAT, where you can get access to the 3 free sessions.
Majonzi is a Swahili word, means grief or deep sorrow. And Majonzi, I came up with the idea, approached Yvonne Fields, a founder and director of Ubele. And the idea was to try and raise money through GoFundMe to then give out small grants to households who've lost family members and to community and faith organisations who might want to organise events in their communities around loss and grief.
What about some of the people who are fundraising to help raise funds for the Majonzi Fund?
Yeah, 2,000 people have made donations so far, small donations from, you know, £5 to larger amounts. And on top of that, there have been a number of individuals who have actually raised money on behalf of the Majonzi Fund, ranging from some people have made kind of PPE masks of African miles and sold that and raised money for us. Kashane David, who is a brand of rum, he's making a donation through some of the sales of his rum to the Majonzi Fund. London Gospel Community Choir dedicated one of their songs, and some of the royalties will go to the Majonzi Fund.
We've had Carl Gabriel, Carnival Mask Maker Extraordinaire from the Yar Asantewaa Centre. He has donated some one of his shields from his carnival costume for us to auction off to raise funds. And we've had Alexander the Great, who is the BBC's Calypsonian in residence. He actually did a whole new song on grief called Sometimes, and all royalties will go to the Majonzi Fund.
So we've had a young the ebook of recipes, diaspora recipes from the Caribbean, Africa, Southeast Asia, where he approached people in the catering world and to donate their recipes in this ebook, and he's raised a fair amount of money for us. We've had Henny Beaumont from the Guardian newspaper. She produces fantastic print of all the frontline staff, BME frontline staff who have died, mainly in the NHS, who have died in the last 10, 11 months, and that's on sale on the Guardian website. So small acts of kindness have been really fantastic to support the work of the Majonzi Fund. So we launched it in April, had support of GoFundMe. To date, we've raised just under £100,000. On National Reflection Day, we'll be launching the grant scheme.
Okay. And I know there's that famous saying, it takes a village to raise a child, but I think also it definitely takes a village to get us through this pandemic. And I'm so glad to hear you guys speaking about your village and all the people who are rallying around you at this important time. Thank you so much for joining us and for all the amazing work you're doing at BAMEstream.
Thank you for having us.
No problem at all. Thank you.
You have been listening to Bridging the Gap, a podcast series by the Ubele Initiative and Colourful Studios for the BAMEstream project. Join us again on another episode where we'll be looking at how COVID-19 affected the Black, Asian, and minority ethnic communities in the UK.